From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air, thousands and thousands of men, women, and children have put on planes, trains, and buses in Texas and dropped off into the cold air of winter in Chicago. It's a political fight between red states and blue cities, using human beings as the pawns. To date, more than 33,000 migrants have been transported to Chicago from Texas alone. Now, they've also been flown to Rockford or dropped off at suburban commuter train stations. Their arrivals tend to be unannounced, which has overwhelmed the city and volunteers. Shelter has been one of the main struggles, both finding sufficient space and making sure the conditions there are healthy and humane. Last month, a 5-year-old died after falling ill in a shelter in Pilsen. There's a lot that's been happening since asylum seekers first started arriving in September of 2022. Joining us now to talk through all of this is Tessa Weinberg, city government and politics reporter at Chicago public radio station, WBEZ. Tessa, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Michael Loria, staff reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Michael, welcome to the show to you as well.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, you can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What do you want to know about the migrant situation in Chicago? How do you think officials are doing handling it? And especially if you've heard any moves downstate to try and alleviate some of the conditions up there and share some of the burden here. We'd love to hear about that. 800-222-9455. All right, Michael, I want to start with sort of a basic question here, because you hear commentators talking about why people are coming here. Maybe some of them are not legitimately seeking asylum. Some just, you know, want to do the more usual immigration thing of making money, sending it back home. But they've learned asylum's a better way to get your foot in the door. I wonder what you're hearing. You're actually speaking to people who are coming here. What are you hearing from them about why they are coming to America?
That's a great question, Brian. I think, you know, the folks coming over right now, I mean, it definitely depends, but I think it's kind of a different type of migration than maybe folks are used to before. And I think maybe a good example of this is some of the conversations I had around Christmas time with people. Obviously, it's a time when folks want to be with their families and that type of thing. And a lot of the people I talked with talked about, you know, sort of happy memories that they had back home in places like Venezuela and places like Haiti, and how those types of Christmas celebrations aren't what they like, aren't like how they were before, just because the countries have changed so much because of widespread violence and economic insecurity. So to that extent, I think a lot of them are coming really just to get the sort of basics of a better life, not necessarily just send home to their families, although that does exist as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about the situation then. What happens when a bus arrives in Chicago, people step off? What are they expecting? What have they been told in Texas that entice them? Because Texas is saying, hey, they're getting on these buses and planes voluntarily. What are they expecting when they come to Chicago?
Yeah, it kind of depends. I mean, some of them, I think earlier on, had higher expectations about what to find in Chicago. They were promised sort of shelter, help with finding work and that type of thing. That was present, I think, especially during the summer. I think at this point that has kind of changed. Folks who are on these migratory journeys have their own communication routes, and a lot of them are a bit more aware of the situations inside Chicago where there's not a lot of shelter space. But at the same time, they're getting a lot of pressure from people inside of Texas to go to one of these other places outside of Texas. And I've talked with a lot of people who have been told, you know, you have a choice between New York City and Chicago. They hear things are even worse in New York City, so they come to Chicago.
Interesting. Tessa, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What are conditions like in the shelters? You know, we've heard stories over the months of people being housed in police stations and things like that. There was a big controversy over a site that was going to be used, and then it turned out there were all kinds of environmental problems there and public health problems.
Yeah, it's been, you know, a wide variety of how folks have been sheltered in the city. At the moment, the city is really focusing on more brick and mortar shelters. And, you know, these would be places where folks can be, you know, having a cot maybe on the floor indoors. You know, these have been described as pretty, you know, crowded conditions. And I think as we had recently saw with the death of a 5-year-old boy who was living in this shelter, it really put a lot of scrutiny on conditions inside these shelters where folks have been saying, medical care is often, maybe inadequate or hard to get. And there's not a lot of eyes on what conditions can really look like in shelters from, volunteers who are not allowed to enter, to media who have been denied entry. And the city's been really trying to expand these brick and mortar locations in conjunction with the state. A former CVS in Little Village will soon open to house folks. And I think that kind of shows just some of the scope of the kinds of buildings even getting used. We've had, shuttered schools to, former big box stores to warehouse type, buildings being used, which aren't always necessarily, built to accommodate people living in them 24/7. And this, has now been the city's focus on these brick and mortar sites. Like you had mentioned, the city had seen thousands and hundreds of folks go through police stations where people were sleeping on the floors of police station lobbies, which I think people, despite their different maybe feelings on the city's response, I think it was pretty agreed that that was not really a place where it meant to house people long term. And folks were often kind of, had to leave the stations in the middle of the day when they had to be cleaned. People are coming in and out at all hours to, make reports to police. So that was, something the city was desperately trying to move away from. And you'd also mentioned the base camps, and that was another option with winter that the city was eyeing, really large tent-like structures that could hold hundreds and thousands of people. And these were extremely controversial. Some folks, were very critical of, describing these as concerns that this could be something like refugee camps and not wanting to see, tents be used at all. And the city, has since backed off of that a little bit. There are both potential sites that had been under consideration. Environmental analyses found that there were environmental concerns. There'd be remediation of the land needed. That would additionally take some more time. So the city has not been moving forward with construction on those. However, they've said that those are still maybe on the table down the road. They still have contracts in place to be able to rely on contractors to quickly stand those up. And so while that maybe is not an option right at this moment, maybe we'll see a return to that later down the line.
Michael, we heard Tessa mention there the 5-year-old who died in a shelter in Pilsen. What else can you tell us about what exactly happened there?
Yeah, Tessa brings up a great point there in terms of both the death of John Carlos Martinez Rivero and the opening of shelters. So just kind of giving a broader picture here. In September and October, the number of migrants arriving in Chicago shot way up, almost double the number per month that we were seeing over the summer. So as part of that, to get away from the use of police stations, like you both had mentioned, the city opened up a bevy of shelters. I think it was nearly 10 between September and the present. And one of these was the shelter in Pilsen, where Jean Carlos's family moved into. That shelter quickly became by far the largest in the city. And as Tessa said, we have not been able to get inside of the shelter, but folks from inside the shelter have taken photographs and shared them with reporters. And from what we can see inside, it's a very crowded situation where folks are sleeping one right next to another. From what we've learned from COVID, that's not great from a public health perspective. And I think some of that comes out in the passing of this 5-year-old boy, where if you look at the police report, it notes that in the days leading up to his death, he was visibly ill. It notes that the day beforehand, his parents had asked someone else for a sort of anti-fever medication. They weren't sure what it was, but they thought it was ibuprofen. And I think it's kind of telling for a couple reasons. And mainly, I think that it shows where they were turning to for sort of medical health, right? Or medical help, right? They were not able to see a professional. They weren't able to get help in a professional care setting. So instead, they just did what they could. And like Tessa brought up, I think, that's kind of speaking to the sort of the concerns that a lot of people have about conditions in shelter and access to medical care there. I mean, just from a pure public health perspective.
Yeah, and Tessa, I want to stay on that point for a moment because the Chicago Health Department reported 400 chickenpox cases, 81% of those coming from migrants in city shelters. I mean, what does that say about the conditions in which the migrants are living?
They in a recent bulletin had said that, the 400 chickenpox cases in 2023, that was the most since they had first been doing that kind of surveillance in 2005. And they pointed to that a majority of these cases were among folks who had, been living in these congregate-like settings. And I think it really underscores, like Michael pointed of, how these are maybe not from a public health standpoint the best conditions, that it's, natural that if someone is sick and you're in close quarters, perhaps infection is going to spread pretty quickly as well. And especially some of these sites, because they are maybe how they're constructed or just limited space, if you maybe can't have room to quarantine, people who are maybe facing illness or be able to separate them into another space, I think it's, it just makes sense that things are maybe spreading like wildfire really quickly. And especially for folks who, this is something that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson has been critical of pointing to the conditions that, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is sending folks in and, accusing, because of that, saying folks are arriving to Chicago sick. And I think it's also just, folks have already been going through harrowing conditions to even reach the US. And so probably have already coming to, this country and the state with just tons of existing illnesses and needs that probably need, looked at. And just, that probably is just compounding than just some of these conditions in the shelters that they're also experiencing.
All right, well, let's get into the politics of this then. So, Michael, what else has Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson had to say about this ongoing crisis or situation? Take it where you will.
Right. I just want to follow up a little bit there. So Tessa brings up the point that, Mayor Brandon Johnson has been trying to sort of say in the instance, in the case of John Carlos, that, the folks are arriving here sick. And I guess maybe to some extent that is true. Folks, when they cross the border, they have their medications confiscated. Some of them have complications from the road that aren't treated. But I think that a lot of the illnesses that we're seeing now are things that healthcare providers tell me that they didn't see in their patients, their migrant patients originally. But yeah, so Mayor Brandon Johnson has tried to sort of put the blame on Texas, and he's tried to do, I think, tried to basically get more coordination by sort of making rules around when and where buses can arrive. Again, after the high number of arrivals in September and October, in mid of November, he sort of instituted this intercity bus ordinance, which basically limits bus arrivals to permitted arrivals during weekday business hours. But I think that's kind of quickly, I don't know if you want to say backfired, but it doesn't seem to be working out. As we've seen, the buses coming from Texas have instead started dropping people off at train stations outside of Chicago. Sometimes it just at highway pit stops and kind of just leaving folks there. Greg Abbott has also started chartering planes to send them to Chicago and, like you mentioned, Rockford. And yeah, this is part of a wave of folks trying to get a bit more coordination from Texas. Eric Adams in New York, Mayor Eric Adams, did the same thing. However, I think kind of the bottom line, though, is that Chicago has said they are a welcoming city. So the city needs to take control of the things that it can control, which is, what type of care folks are getting inside city shelters.
Tessa, let's talk a couple, just a couple minutes before we need to take a break, but let's talk a little bit more about Texas Governor Greg Abbott. I mean, how does he justify, sending tens of thousands of people by bus to Chicago?
Yeah, I think to, what Michael pointed of, Chicago being a welcoming city, having a sanctuary city status, that was something that Governor Greg Abbott's office explicitly pointed to, when it sent that first chartered plane in December to O'Hare. And, they said Mayor Johnson is failing to live up to his, welcoming city ordinance by targeting, buses that were coming from Texas with these increased penalties and these new rules that the mayor says is aimed at increasing coordination. So they pointed to that as a reason why they were expanding into this new, territory of sending flights to Chicago. And so that has been on one hand of, Abbott, pushing the city to kind of live up to what it says is its welcoming city status. I do want to note though that the sanctuary city status means that the city will not cooperate with federal immigration authorities, regardless of someone's immigration status. And, it's not really necessarily related to folks who are arriving seeking asylum, but they've often been conflated. And at the same time, Governor Abbott has repeatedly pointed to this as, steps he's taking to put pressure on the Biden administration to secure the border, and that, they've indicated they are not going to stop their tactics anytime soon when it comes to not only busing folks, but also sending folks by plane, and that they are only kind of ramping up these efforts to put political pressure, not only on, maybe mayors of Democratic cities, but more broadly, the Biden administration, federal government as well.
All right, we're going to take a break. We will continue this conversation for a few more minutes after we return. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show, and we're talking about the ongoing migrant situation in Chicago with two reporters who've been covering the story. Tessa Weinberg is city government and politics reporter for WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago. Michael Loria is staff reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I also want to share a programming note. Next week, all next week on the 21st Show, we're going to be taking a deep dive into addiction, overdose, and fentanyl. We'll be talking about the history of it, the politics of it, treatment, and more. We want to incorporate your comments and questions, so send us an email. Talk@21stshow.org is the address. Talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the ongoing migrant crisis in Chicago with Tessa Weinberg from public radio station WBEZ. She covers city government and politics there. And Michael Loria, who's a staff reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. And Michael, I want to play a bit of tape. This is from Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. He was on Face the Nation recently, and he compared the current situation with a lot of migrants from places like Venezuela, Haiti, as you mentioned, and elsewhere, with what happened when Ukrainian refugees arrived in Chicago when the war against Russia began. Let's listen to that.
That's exactly right. There are 30,000 Ukrainian refugees that are in the city of Chicago right now. The difference is, of course, they were fully supported by the federal government, and they were able to acclimate themselves and integrate into our economy. We have a number of asylum seekers from Central and South America and the continent of Africa. And the question is, why are we not providing that same support and treatment?
So, Michael, I wonder, what are you hearing from the migrants themselves about the level of support and treatment they feel they're getting or not getting?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say, a lot of folks that I talk to are very happy to be given shelter. They're very happy to be given food, even if the food is not always great, they say. But in terms of other forms of help, I think a lot of people are surprised by how difficult it is to begin legally working here. They didn't, I guess, necessarily expect all those restrictions. And I think that Mayor Johnson brings up a good point there around the Ukrainian refugees, because I mean, I haven't had a chance to check the actual number that I've arrived in Chicago, but I understand that, there was a bit more of a seamless transition to actually begin working. Whereas for migrants arriving across the border, across the southern border from Haiti and elsewhere, it can be a months-long process before they can begin legally working, which is why the onus is on the city in the meantime to help them out. So I think a lot of folks are kind of struggling with that aspect, with the aspect of the fact that they're supposed to move into apartments right now, and they're getting assistance from the state to do that. But it's a limited time that they get that assistance, and they're not sure whether at the end of that they'll be able to have a consistent job where they'll be able to continue living in that apartment.
All right, Tessa Weinberg, I want to ask you, the mayor has been talking about a 60-day limit for staying in shelters. That's looming. What are you going to be watching for in the weeks and months ahead?
Yeah, that so the 60-day limit is, for any new folks who have been entering city shelters. Their stay is now capped at 60 days. And if they hit that 60-day deadline and are still in need of, being sheltered, they have to basically start over and ask for another request to be put in shelter. And so the first wave of kind of deadlines of these deadlines coming up is going to happen this month. And so I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on, how does this, new limit really work in practice? With my colleague Amy Chin, who's a data reporter at WBEZ, we had our goods requested at least data on length of stays as of November 1st, and her analysis had found that roughly 7 in 10 shelter stays for migrants were longer than 60 days, and an average stay was 76 days for those who had exited shelter before November 1st, which for a lot of volunteers and service providers, they said, that only underscored what they'd been seeing, and they even thought those numbers could perhaps be an underestimate since the data was not comprehensive. And so I think there's a lot of concerns from folks who have been assisting migrants that this new policy might result in a lot of displacement, especially for folks who, like Michael said, are trying to find work, maybe have been able to find somewhat of a stable, different gigs in the area or in the shelters they've been staying in. And if they're going to be upended, having to move to a different place, having to start over for their kids who maybe have been enrolled in CPS schools, what that will mean. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty of how this is going to affect folks' stability. And I'm curious what this will mean too, as we've seen, the number of migrants in the city shelter system rising as we've been able to maybe move people out of places like police stations. Just means more and more people are also going to be, now facing limits on their stays, while at the same time, the state has reduced the amount of rental assistance for folks that from a total of 6 months. Now, people who were in city shelters at the time it was announced in November only get up to 3 months of assistance. And anyone who's been newly entering the shelter system doesn't receive that rental assistance at all, which, I think advocates are concerned. Is only going to make it harder for folks to find stability in an apartment. And so they're worried that, while everyone maybe shares the same goal of wanting folks to be self-sufficient, to be able to put down roots, that some of these supports that have been there along the way are now also being taken away at the same time.
Michael, just less than a minute left. You've had a number of stories sort of looking at the human face of this situation. You mentioned the one about holidays. You also had one on the stories you don't get to share in your day-to-day reporting, super briefly, maybe 30 seconds. Is there one that's really stood out to you?
I mean, again, this is kind of going back to the sort of the different situation folks are coming in. And really the one that sticks out to me is really that there was a man I spoke with who back in Venezuela, he told me that he and his family had to flee because essentially a local official had sort of had a vendetta against the family and murdered one of his brothers. And I mean, there's a bit more details to it, which I can't get into quite yet. But it's just kind of this type of situation where it's an abuse of power that here in the United States is completely foreign. And I think kind of puts into perspective the reason why folks are coming over.
Michael Loria, Tessa Weinberg, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.